I'll call to order the Devils Lake Water Improvement District meeting, February 2nd, 2012. Consent agenda. Anybody have any motions?
I move that we adopt the consent agenda.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, public comment.
Good evening. Sorry I missed last month, but here I am. So you guys have got several interesting items on the agenda tonight, so I thought I'd make a couple comments on them. All the intent to let you know our opinion. So the first one is on the septic program.
You're speaking in the mic too, please.
I think you can hear me, but several items on the septic tank program. So here we go. As it relates to the scale or the potential impact of the program, the updated permit count that was in the report is interesting, but I'm concerned that the focus has been to discuss watershed-wide numbers under the ordinance. We're really only focusing on lakefront property, or at least that's kind of where the city's focused. So I think it's important that the decision-making on this project should be guided by the scale of the actual project. The board and council and public should be discussing this issue based on lakefront home counts, about 400 lakefront homes impacting about 250 septic systems on the lake, not the 700 homes that you hear touted by Mr. Hawker. The district now states about 205 of these are without records, so around 28%. So just a simple math would be about maybe 70 homes that don't have records on lakefront. But it's probably much less than that, because that group of homes has turned a lot more than maybe the ones up in the hills. And I'm guessing may have had more updates on the system. Also, Oregon law, or by Oregon law, the Department of Environmental Quality is the body that has the authority to set regulations and standards related to on-site septic systems. Currently, the DEQ has that authority provided under ORS 454.010. Under their OARs, the Oregon DEQ has entered into agreements with counties, including Lincoln County, authorizing them to be the department's agent for on-site systems. DEQ has not designated Devil's Lake Water Improvement District or the City of Lincoln City to be their agent. And so, therefore, I think you should refrain from setting septic inspection standards, but rather work with DEQ. My concern there is that the inspection standards or requirements should be uniform throughout the county. Homeowners must currently comply with DEQs managed by Lincoln County. Homeowners will also need to comply with the proposed rules that will be drafted by DEQ as they try to comply with the Coast Zone Management Act. So in the report, staff implies that the septic program standards may need to be more extensive than DEQ, or at least that the inspection standards might not accomplish the goals of the program. This sets the stage for costly reinspection under the district's program. It could occur that when septic systems newly installed, recently repaired, or recently inspected under sale, when the home sells under the new DEQ rules, they may not meet the district standards. Therefore, it would result in unnecessary reinspection by homeowners. Something brand new tank, replaced tank, and then it gets inspected again. A couple of comments on enforcement. You've heard me say this before, water shutoff should not be part of the program. It puts the entire program at risk. It's based on its use in annexation. I'm sure this will be challenged in the next legislative session. Hostage annexation is now a statewide issue. If I were Mr. Hawker or Mayor Anderson, I would be quite concerned that water shutoff-based septic program will make the city much more vulnerable to a legislative reversal of their tactics. Other concerns include, in the staff report, there's just a comment that was critical of the county's procedures in that it said, at this point, regular maintenance is not monitored. I'm not sure what was being suggested here, but please remember that this type of reporting will be part of the DEQ modifications and does not need to be addressed by Devil's Lake Water Improvement District. So recommendations on that. The board should be provided actual home counts of what will be inspected under the ordinance. Details presented about this program to the city and public should be based on that subset of the entire watershed. The inspection criteria must be uniform under state, county, under the state rules. County and Devil's Lake programs should all be the same. Therefore, the district should use the current DEQ standards and participate in DEQ's rulemaking process to express their concerns as the rules are modified. And water shutoff, of course, shouldn't be part of the program. Under the communications report, I just want to quickly state I really want to express my appreciation for the water level and weather updates that were provided by the district via Facebook and Twitter. I understand that we can't count on that, but the feedback I received is it was very valuable information to people. On SinoWatch changes, I want to state that I fully support the proposed changes to the changing to the HABS designation. The greatest benefit is that it will be easier for the public to look up blue-green algae information online because it's a more prevalent designation. Looking through it, it seemed like there was one inconsistency, perhaps. The FAQ advises that in the presence of a bloom, you should boat at slower speed and avoid expressive spray. Well, on the water contact advisory notice, it says avoid areas of scum when boating. They're slightly different. I think the advice on the FAQ probably should prevail. And then finally, on the public records request, I think the purpose of the document's misguided. It states the preliminary purpose of the document, it shouldn't be to minimize the impact of the district's workload. The purpose of the document should be to promote, the promotion of full access to the district's public records in order to assure continuing public involvement and promote confidence in the district's activities. Just a different purpose. The internal advisory communications paragraph is more restrictive or at least more confusing than the paragraph that I believe it came from under ORS 192.410, which is clearer as it was originally written, so I would suggest you review that, and it's a bit confusing what's stated there. The confidential submission paragraph seems a little out of place with liberal use of informant. I get the concept. It's a valid concept, but it's a little creepy, and maybe you should modify the way that's worded. At face value, the pricing seems high. It's just 10 pages of photocopying and printing at no cost. However, the footnote appears to provide appropriate pricing latitude. The concept in the footnote is so important, I think it should become more prominent in the policy. In other words, it gives you a little latitude on when to use the pricing. What about PDF? It's not offered in there. Offered sent by email. By far, that would be the lowest cost method of producing a document. So my recommendation on that is simply defer approval till next month for the board to provide input, make modifications, and it'll give another opportunity for the public to comment. And that's my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Larry Brown.
I think my voice will carry fine here. It carries across the lake practically, so I'm not going to move the mic any closer here. Again, my name is Larry Brown. I reside at 35 Indian Shores, and I also have a residence in Salem. With regard to the tax exemption issue, with regard to real property taxes that we discussed last meeting, I talked about an hour and a half ago to Bruce Polvey. Paul did it the easy way. He walked down this flight of stairs and laid it in Bruce's lap, which is great with regard to your landlord, because you've got a landlord that's a lot more cooperative than most of them. Normally, we would have to be doing that ourselves, but Bruce has taken the ball and run with it and has had a lot of success and gotten most all the documents and had a lengthy talk with Rob Thomas, and I think things are moving along rapidly there. So I think he plans on having all of the documents completed, signed, and before the assessor's office by March 15th, which will give them plenty of time to come up here, check his numbers and check his footages and that sort of thing, and finalize this before the 31st of March, which is the deadline for doing that. So I think we're making progress there. On the septic issue, from day one, I've strongly opposed the septic tank issue. I think it's outside of our purview here. I don't think anybody should get involved in a field that they're not expert in. There isn't anybody on the border in management here that's an expert on septic tanks and that sort of a thing. And quite frankly, all the experts that have come in here and come before the board and the meetings that I've been to have said, listen, you really don't have a problem. We've tested the water ad nauseum and found basically no problems with the water in that regard. Certainly nothing that we could attribute to septic tanks. The problem we found was dogs. So I think, once again, what you're doing is you're wasting the district's time. You don't have the time, and I don't have the money, and neither do the rest of the people that are paying the tab, and many of you are paying the tab, probably all of you are paying the tab just like I am. So I don't see any sense in this wasting time and money on projects that really aren't worthwhile, and we need to stay away from things that we don't know a lot about. Looking at notes here. Yeah, it seems to me that the septic tank owners, I mean, if you were a septic tank owner and you had a failing septic system, you'd have more reason than anybody on the lake, much less this board, to take care of the problem. It's your grandkids are going to have to walk through it in the front yard, swim in it and off your dock, any leakage and that sort of thing. It just seems to me that the biggest motivation in the entire world, if I had a problem with my septic tank, I'd be the first guy that would want to take care of it and fix it. And if that didn't come to your attention and the neighbors or something were aware of it, they'd be all over you. So, I mean, it seems to me there's just a whole lot of avenues that make a lot more sense than us trying to get involved in things that really have a real sour taste to them. Then you throw such factors in as we're going to come shut off your water. It just creates a huge sense of bad will, and that's the last thing we want with all our people that are in the watershed, with all the people that live on the lake. I think we want camaraderie between all of us. We'll get a lot more accomplished if we can do it, you know, in a common sense and friendly manner rather than a confrontational type of situation, which I don't like that idea at all, and I haven't liked it from the first. And I do think particularly if we're getting involved with the city, and the city, as you well know, over the years has probably been one of the biggest polluters in the lake with sewage bills, you know, year after year after year. And so that leaves another bad taste, I think, in somebody's mouth whose door you're going to knock on and insist that their septic tank be inspected. Recently, and in the information that Paul provided, or that Seth provided, I think you requested that the county send you notices of people in the last 24 months that had septic work done, and it seemed to me there were 19 or 20 people in a 24-month period that had basically called, gotten a permit to have septic work done in one format or another, which tells me there's a lot of compliance out there. If somebody's got a problem, they're going to go down to the county, and they're going to get a permit. And the counties throughout the state have sanitarians, professionals in this field, to get the issue resolved. I just don't think we need to get involved in it. So, end of septic issue. Our landscape things that Seth has been in charge of, I certainly appreciate all Seth's time and work and effort and things like this. I just don't see, as I look at the money spent on these two landscape projects, and then I drive down there and see a patch of weeds, and I mean a ton of weeds, and half the plants are dead, and it's been in for a matter of months. I just look at that and say, over time, this is going to be a maintenance nightmare. and as you well know, landscaping, trees, whatever, whoever you, and I own a lot of real estate, it's a tremendous amount of work taking care of that sort of thing. I went by last summer, and Paul and Seth were out there, both of them at whatever dollars per hour, but more than $8 an hour, let's put it that way, pulling weeds. And I thought, well, goodness sakes, that's going to be a real expensive weed pulling day. So I don't know if I'd want to do a whole lot of this. It's just say it's, maybe that's something we ought to stay away from a little bit. If you can encourage landowners, as has been suggested, to do some work, I think then that idea is fine. I'm not in favor of doing it. If you had a scheduled clinic or meeting or something like that in the middle of March, Seth, it seems to me that the middle of March isn't a good time to have a meeting like that. As timely as it might be from a planning perspective or whatever else, who's down here in March? All the lakefront property owners, which is the people we want to do planning, are not here yet. It'd be a much brighter time to have it in May, late April, May, June, sometimes when we're going to have some people here. So I just don't think you're going to get a turnout for your meeting in March. The water flow idea that was mentioned earlier and the lake level, I mean, it's a great idea. It just seems to me we ought to set some standards with regard to high lake levels when we anticipate flooding, and there's lots of places on the lake that have flooded on a fairly regular basis. But when the water hits a certain level, you make that decision, whether it's 10 feet or whatever. From that point on, every single day, it ought to be posted on our website, Facebook, and what the lake level is. So somebody who lives in Portland, McMinnville, Salem, or whatever, they can kind of monitor, and they will know with regard to their house when their house is in trouble. So I think it's an excellent idea, an excellent communication thing, and something, it's goodwill again. Let's just post it on the website, and that's something I think can be easily done. To further help out that issue, I keep bringing up the logs in the middle of D River. And you know, if we get those, they're not logs, they're monstrous stumps. And it seems to me we need to get those out of there. This fish habitat scenario that Paul's thrown at us a couple of times, and he says that that Fish and Wildlife have thrown it at him, it doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, there aren't a lot of stumps out in the ocean, but there are a lot of fish in the ocean. And so I don't think that these are any benefit whatsoever to wildlife habitat. And when they're restricting water flow out of the lake, contributing to flooding and these sort of things, I think those, and in addition to that, ruin a really great recreation area because they've caused sand to block up in there. I think it's just a great idea to get rid of those, and it ought to be one of our priorities. Cyanobacteria thing, it's a simple thing. Just delete from all information, publications, signs, literature, whatever, the word cyanobacteria. Doesn't make any sense at all. It's negative in every way, shape, and form. And let's talk about blue-green algae. We're trying to communicate with the public. And if I hadn't been to Devil's Lake Water Improvement Board, I wouldn't have a clue what cyanobacteria was. And it would throw up in my mind something that's, you know, deathly dangerous type of thing. Let's just don't do it. Just eliminate it. I saw somewhere in one of the brochures, and it said blue-green algae, a.k.a. cyanobacteria. Forget the a.k.a. Just keep it out of all of our literature together, and we'll do a much better job communicating with the public. Public records. Mitch's comments, similar to mine, the first thing that flashed in my face was 25 cents a page for documents. Well, I can assure you it doesn't cost us 25 cents a page to do documents. If so, we need a new printer. So paper doesn't cost that much. Some of the other fees, just take a careful look at those fees. It's a goodwill gesture. If people are interested in, you know, getting information or documents and things from us, they should be available to them, and we should do everything we can to make them affordable.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, Devil's Lake Plan. It's like big revitalization program, Seth.
Just really quick on some of the public comment that was made on the septic tank revitalization program. A lot of it was not correct, and the premises of them were not correct either. And I just want to say that district staff, we are available at any time. You can email us, you can call us, you can come in, and we can have those discussions outside of a public meeting, or if you have any questions about the program, that's a good time to be available. We're really, really available for you. So come in and we can talk about those things. So the update on the county records, we got those back last month. So basically Devil's Lake Water Improvement District 2 years ago created a septic database. So we went down, we looked at all the records that the county has and created a database on those records. So since it's been about 2 years, we just requested, can we see all the permits that have come through the county? And any time that you do, you'll go through the county process, which is the DEQ process, and for that it's new construction, repairs, authorizations. If you're going to alter your system, you need to go through the county. So there's a total of 19, and there's a table there explaining what happened. 12 of those were for minor repairs. One was a major repair. One was a renewal for a repair. Just basically they had a repair permit. It expired, so they got a renewal for that. A couple of repairs to ATT systems, alteration, authorization, and site evaluation. So then looking at up until this point, there's about 680 systems that are in the watershed, and about one-third of those had no county record, which means they were basically put in pre-1974. And if you talk to the county and ask them about steel septic tanks, they'll tell you about 10 years. After about 10 years on a steel tank, you're going to start seeing holes in it. So we have one-third of our systems are pre-1974 systems. So anyways, when you look at the 19 that we had, 15 of those systems were part of those not documented systems. So we now have information, a little bit more information on septic systems in the watershed. Do you guys have any questions on that? Otherwise, I can move on.
Do we know if these were also change of ownership, or did you track that?
Meaning if the change of ownership was the reason for the inspection? Right. I am not sure. Then regarding the septic system inspection ordinance, that's currently being drafted, and we're expected to get a draft sometime in February. Again, it's the city attorney and the city manager who are working on that, and it's just two people, and if something major comes up, those two kind of have their fingers in a lot of other things. So if something comes up, it can get pushed back a little bit. Depending how soon we get that back, I think it's possible that we could see a draft of it as early as March, but I would expect probably more April to look at an actual draft. In the meantime, one of the things that the city had asked us to look into was coming up with inspection criteria. So basically, when there's an inspection, what are we going to look at? What's going to be seen? And there's a couple of just examples. At the last meeting, I kind of brought that up, and you asked what were some examples. So here's like a county form that they have, and then the A and B septic form. That was the E-Web project where they went up the Mackenzie River and had septic inspections, which I think we've talked about a little bit before. But that's the form that they used. So at any rate, to come up with those inspection criteria, we're going to be having a meeting, including DEQ, Lincoln County arm of DEQ, which is Tony Shear, who's been up here before. And the city will be there, and then we're also going to have local private inspectors, the people from the private sector. And then hopefully from that, come away from that meeting, and then I'll come up with a couple of different inspection forms or what criteria we think is important to be included. And that's all I have for septic.
Save our shoreline.
So the Y Lakescape class is something that we've been doing for the past year. We do it twice a year. And the idea there is really, we talk about the benefits of lakescaping, and all these things come off of the word landscaping, and you're starting to see these kind of branches of it coming out. There's like xeriscaping, which is if you live in the desert, it's a way of landscaping where you require no water. Lakescaping is basically for people who have or live very close to lakes, and it's kind of focusing on certain components of landscaping that you tailor to the land situation that you're in. So we're going to be doing, hoping to do another one of these lakescaping classes. These are free, open to the public. Sometime in mid-March, I'm thinking the 10th or the 17th. They run for 2 hours. And again, we we include lunch into that. And generally the topics we've covered is we look at the history of Devil's Lake and land uses, benefits of lakescaping, native plants, and plant selection. We go over some design, maintenance, and then we talk about the Save Our Shoreline program, which is something the district has been doing for 2 years. And in that program, we will basically organize and do shoreline restorations on people's properties. And we'll pay 75% of most costs to that program. So again, if you're a shoreline property owner and you want to really do a benefit to the lake, get a hold of us and we can do a shoreline restoration on your property, and again we'll pay 75% of most applicable costs. But if you guys want to do that lakescape course, again, we can I think the total budget for that's about $680. That includes lunch, and then also I want to do a mailer to everybody. It's not necessary, but I think a good promotional material. And in addition, in that mailer we can kind of explain the Save Our Shoreline program, explain some of the key reasons why we want people to be doing lakescaping. So even if they don't get to the course, they're getting a little bit of information about it anyways.
So are those direct mailers, or is that putting it in the water bill?
Those are going to be direct mailers to shoreline property owners.
I think if we're going to do that, we might want to look at other communications we might want to put out along with that. Do you know if this corresponds with kind of the timing around spring breaks?
Spring break, I think, is the last week of March.
I was thinking it might be good, you know, because if people from out of town are coming in, have, you know, their kids have the week off, or, you know, that might help get some of that crowd in if we're gonna do it in March.
Right, and I think it's the last weekend of March, and yeah, like I said, I haven't put any word out about this, so if you want to coordinate that with spring break, we can certainly do that.
Seth, why are we not offering the landscaping for landscapers course also?
You can really at this point kind of have them be combined. I mean, if landscapers want to come to this, they can. And the past lakescaping class that we did have landscapers come to that one. But I think the landscaper class that we had a pretty good number of the landscapers in the community who were there. So I think they do know about the program.
Okay. Well, so you want us to decide on a date or just authorize you to do it the 10th or the 17th, whatever?
Yeah, just to allocate the money, and if you guys want to do it, if you think it'd be more beneficial to do during spring break, we can certainly do that.
All right, well, I'll make a motion that we authorize Seth to offer the Y Landscape course on a date in March that of his choice. And I think we would want, maybe you want to see the mailer before it sends it out? Because you're suggesting there might be other stuff we want to include with it.
I was thinking, you know, multiple purpose. You know, we're going to create a mailer.
Yeah, I agree.
Why don't you plan on pulling, maybe we can plan on pulling the mailer together and giving a draft to the board on the first week of March, and we can get it out right after that.
Yeah, that sounds good. And if there's any content that you think of over the next month that you want to include,
okay,
let us know.
So, your motion include budget?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we had to build in a little bit of flexibility here. So what's your feel for an authorization limit? You got $680 as your estimated cost. $800 for the...
Yeah.
Fence, is that will that do it?
Yeah, it should be fine.
Wait,
all
right.
Are we including in this the printing?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, so that'll be a separate. All right.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nice. Cool, good input, thanks.
So on the planting guidance, Seth, how many did we do last time?
I think we've been doing them in batches of 50, and I think we've done 3 batches. So we've done, and then there have been times we've gone in just to get like 10 here, 10 there. So probably somewhere between 150 and 200.
Is there any... This is probably the best price we can get.
I think they're between $8.50 and $9.
Yeah, I think about that. Yeah.
Camping a little bit.
Yes, you. I'm sorry, because you've actually, this is probably the second time or third time we've talked about that. Yeah, that's a definite possibility to include some of the invasives in that.
Is there a bigger? Getting some. Yeah, and then recognize. But I also have.
I think for the most part for that concern, it's the aquatic species, and I think even finding, like sourcing a lot of those species has been difficult to do. So maybe just a note in there about if you're going to do aquatic species, it's good to talk with us first. But I don't think we're seeing people trying to plant straight aquatic species in the lake.
Right. I don't want to create a little havoc.
So if you think about it, the top out is going to come up. It's going to be 6 or 8 feet long. It can create a mat on the surface.
Right.
Right. Or if we, you know, stick to recommendations of plants that are, you know, shorter in nature than.
Yeah, I thought we were going to read.
How do you get one of these? How does the average person get one of these guides? Is it sitting there in a stack and they come through and they can pick up any? Is that how it's done, or do they have to come in and ask for them?
Yeah, they're sitting outside our office. You can come by and pick them up. A lot of times they've been given out at these lakescaping classes. Mm-hmm. Anytime we go out and do site evaluations with people, we generally give them a guide. At the Devil's Lake Revival, we gave away quite a few of them. Anytime we really have people come into our office, it's generally available for them. I think we've done, you know, done other talks in the past, and those are available for people. So... kind of on hand all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's a $10 item, and I just hope that people that get them, if it's that easy, are actually going to use them. That's just, you know, if they come in and ask for it, or if you have... I've just found over the years here, and being in business, that if you give something away free, it generally has no value. And so it just seems like it would be better to get something for it, not the full $10, but, you know... couple dollars or whatever. That way the people are earnest in really wanting it. They're willing to take some change out of their pocket to get it. But anyway, if that works best. I mean, I've gone places and picked up everything that was in the, you know, that was available and taken it home and thrown most of it out. Really find it that interesting.
I think you raise a good point. The reason we haven't been charging for them, because I think this was kind of mentioned, at least brought up at least once before, is it just becomes a lot more work and time and effort to do that. You know, we have to record a $10, and then, you know, and it's like 5 steps to say, oh, thank you, here's your copy. But you're right, in a lot of cases, if somebody has to pay $5 for something, it's a value, more value to them. We haven't, because of our location, I think that people are coming there and they're like interested, you know, if they're coming through. I don't think we've lost a lot just to people grabbing them in out of the front foyer there, per se. So if that's if that's at least some more information in that regard.
Nobody goes there unless they want to.
Yeah, I mean it's not as active as a place. It's like the community center or something, if they were sitting there or something like that, the library, what have you.
So Seth, it sounds like I think what we want to do with the is go ahead and make those updates to the planting guide so we can review them before we authorize doing this at the March meeting.
Sounds good. There's just a couple of additional updates there at the bottom, that just some other things that we're doing with the Save Our Shoreline.
All vegetation management.
Okay, thank you. All of the information that we got from ODF&W to date has been assembled, reviewed, renamed, kind of evaluated in a way that makes it a little bit more digestible, and is available now to our consultant. We did put in basically a second request for public records request, and just got that back today, actually. And it's not cheap. Public records requests are not inexpensive. Our last one was $600.25. This one's like $808.75. And what this request is looking at is things that came up during the Warm Water Working Group work that the state has a group with, and how that may impact, or stuff that came up that discussed relative to grass carp. So I've asked for that information, thinking that it was of value. I guess it's maybe up to you guys to decide if it's worth $808.75 worth of value. But we don't really know what's in it. So, you don't get to open up the box until you pay for it, effectively. But I did get that back today, and I was recommending that, we ought to, just authorize to do it so that we can move forward. Frankly, not expecting that big of a price tag again. But that just shows you, when you have to go through a lot of work to find stuff, it does take staff time. And that's what the state, is quoting us at. Estimating.
For electronic or paper copies?
It's, see if I have it handy. Probably both, generally. I mean, the last one was. A lot of stuff gets back to paper when you get back a few decades, so at least a decade even. Yeah, I would say just offhand, both.
Okay. So do you have an exact figure for what that request is?
Yeah, $808.75. Yeah, I would do, actually, if you want to authorize that to move forward. We'd be paying for this out of the improvement fund as part of the vegetation management that we have appropriated.
I'll second that motion.
Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Anything additional on that topic you need?
Let me check here. I'm just that I'm going to be actually meeting with ODF&W and our consultant next week, and then I've got a separate meeting with him in Bend because I'm going to the Special District Association meeting of Oregon in Central Oregon. So I figured we'd also meet then. So just as an FYI.
Okay. Brian, sewer.
Just for some background, I think everybody knows that the phase that we're in right now for the sewer LID involving Voyage, Lake Drive, and 15th Street is that the consulting engineer hired by this city is developing his report, and he's doing it really in a nice collaborative manner. He's kept me in the loop. He checks with the players in this at the city staff for their input and recommendations as he develops his report. And it's been a nice and effective process. I think we have bumped up against one issue that could be a real obstacle to success, and that is that there's a suggestion floating among the staff and the engineer to include a recommendation to the city council that the LID ordinance include a must connect date. And I'm not sure how serious the idea is, but there's been considerable discussion about it. And when I talked to the different players involved, the rationale that comes up most often is, well, DEQ is going to require this anyway. And we need to get clear on one point with them, and that is DEQ does not impose any requirement for any must-connect date. DEQ only requires the people in the LID to hook up when they have some event that requires a permit, which means it basically amounts to an enlargement, modification, repair, or failure of their system, of a septic system. So so that's just not going to fly. And in my original letter to the property owners, because I did talk to people at DEQ and determined that that was the requirement, and I've talked to them again and redetermined that that's the requirement, they're not going to get involved in making people hook up unless people are going to them and saying, I need a permit. And, of course, they're not going to be going to DEQ unless the county has come out and made, investigated some kind of complaint that their system is failing, or that they've contacted the county and wanted a permit to enlarge or whatever. So a major premise that got this a supermajority of the property owners to be in favor of this was that they would not have to immediately hook up, or there wouldn't be some must connect date imposed as part of the ordinance. And so I'm not sure if this idea is just been floated around, and if and how serious the players involved are. It may just be floated to see if they could get something like that to fly. I don't know, but it's got my attention, and it's going to be something we're going to have to resolve here pretty soon. The letter that I sent to the property owners, and it says in two or three different ways that there will not be a must connect requirement unless you need a permit from DEQ, which means that the property is going to be have a substantial expense anyway. I mean, when you're talking about basically an event that requires a permit, you're talking about a major repair, a new drain field, something that costs thousands of dollars anyway, maybe an ATT system, advanced treatment technology system, that costs as much as hooking up to the sewer anyway. So, I thought we had an agreement about this nice gradualist approach to getting the whole area sewered. It might take many years, but That apple cart's being upset a little bit right now, and so we need to just work our way through that issue, because I think it's a game changer if we don't work our way through it. And I think in terms of the board's interest, which is to see not, of course, to see this area sewered, but also to see the whole lake sewered, if there is a must connect edict as part of the ordinance, you're never going to see another sewer LID initiated by property owners. I don't think. I mean, you're just not going to get majority support for a date certain in the future when you're going to have to cop up $20,000 to hook up to the sewer. So
Brian, if I could, so this was the consultant you were saying that was floating the idea back to staff? And
well, I'm not sure where it originated, but whoever originated it on the basis that DEQ was requiring this. And so that right there is wrong.
Okay, so
I don't want to. I have my suspicions, but I don't want to name names, because A, I'm not sure, and B, I'm really not sure how serious this proposal is. And so,
well,
I'm just saying that this thing has gone so nicely and smoothly so far that I'm just. You asked me for a report, and so I'm reporting the one serious obstacle that I see to approval of this one, and B, there's a couple of things you should understand, is that once the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak, that this is before the city council, can impose any requirements it wants. But I think if the city did recommend that there was a must connect ordinance, then I'd be going before the city council and making the argument that there should not be a must-connect ordinance for some of the reasons I've stated here. Number one being you're going to discourage this from ever happening again.
Right.
And then we'll get into, if this doesn't happen, what other realistic options do you see for sewering the lake?
Well, and I guess that's so kind of what I'm wondering, if the district should offer a letter to staff and to forward on to their consultant with information relative to what you're expressing now, to kind of just to say, hey, we really are supportive of these LIDs moving forward. This will be the model one that we can really look at in the future. But if it gets derailed, for one, there's a lot of work that's already gone to this that will be lost, and effectively a lot of people won't really feel like what they were signing up for is. I mean, they can shoot it down. They'll just imagine just vote against it, and it wouldn't go forward. But then, like you're saying, it would stop progress in this means in a lot of different ways. So, I guess what I would like to do is then just to write a letter to the consultant, to the city, whoever, just to get it back to them relative to that, we think that that's a bad idea to do these automatic or requirements to connect for those reasons you mentioned well there. So,
well, I don't think that's a bad idea if the board wants to authorize you to do that. I wasn't going to call for any resolution or motion rejecting the notion that of a must connect requirement right now, because I, as I say, I'm not sure how serious it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that we might want to do some work to try to nip it in the bud.
And I think that at least a letter makes sense to do that, hopefully. The board thinks that's a sensible idea as well. I mean, I don't see the harm in it.
Motion.
You can just direct me to do that, and it's fine.
All right, well, I guess that's the sense of the board, that you're authorized to to write that letter.
Yeah.
I think we should go ahead and write the letter.
Yeah. Yeah, and it'll just address that simple point relative to, only requiring these connections to come forth at a time of a major repair. the permit.
At a time when DEQ requires a permit.
A permit, yeah.
Well, because at that point, DEQ, they won't issue the permit. They'll just say, you have to hook up now.
Right.
Their rule is that if you are within 300 feet of an available line, you've got to hook up. They will not issue a permit for any further action involving your septic system. You have to hook up.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not involved until they get that request, and the they have some criteria for what is meant by whether it's available or not, mm-hmm. because there can be topographical issues that can. But they even look to the city to determine availability, to determine those issues of availability. So.
Well, maybe we can work together on I can draft a letter and you can take a look at it and make sure that it's factual to what your knowledge is, because obviously you've been spending a ton of time on this, and then I'll just send it on behalf of the district.
And the letter is going to be in addition to my ongoing communications mm-hmm. with the staff and the consulting engineer.
Yeah.
Regarding.
Great.
Yeah, if you want me to sign that, I'll do that.
Okay. Yeah, that might be nice too, to have that come from you.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, thank you.
Erosion study.
So a delay in our project has come forth as a result of two separate bereavements with the main staff of Tetra Tech. Those are. We're in the month of January there. We had anticipated having receive a copy of their next draft by January 23rd. That's now passed. I spoke with Dr. Pennington yesterday or the day before now, and she said that she had forwarded the materials now on to Bob Mussender in Fort Collins, and he was going to review it this weekend, apparently. We're supposed to talk on Tuesday as to see where that is in that process. I've told her that our goal is to have it to staff and in time to give some feedback directly to them, and then get in. If it's ready to go back to the board, then we'd want 2 weeks basically for the board to have it and to open that up again. It might be tight for March, but that's the goal, to get that done, I guess is the short of that. So I did get in the mail, so I must have spoken to her 2 days ago, because the next day I got a FedEx of all of the worksheets that were taken and another computer drive with updated photographs, georectified photographs. So some stuff that was missing has been now filled. So they have made definitely progress forward on the overall project. So just FYI on that as well. So,
and then we can look at what we want to do from a distribution or availability perspective after we've accepted the report.
Yeah, and the goal I think is to ensure that the likes of DQ, ODFW, anybody that really should be looking at this stuff gets it directly, and then it's readily available to the public as well, through our website as best as we can, with the documents and such like this. These GIS files are a completely different realm. They're just not user friendly. You have to have your own software. There actually are some softwares, apparently free viewable software that people can download for ArcView. So that might be something we can let people know. But by and large, the material of that nature is mostly in the hands of people that have the actual software and are using it. So, but FYI, I guess, for the public on that, they might be able to direct them into a way of seeing other stuff that otherwise might be, a little bit harder to view. They also have put together that movie slide that they said that that we requested, that they was part of the RFP. So that also is coming forward. So that'll be another mechanism of viewing the inundation maps and that sort of thing. So
look forward to being able to accept that, so we can have a nice complete package. Communications report.
Okay, so with the we heard just from public comment that you know, we've been kind of posting some information relative to the high water on our Facebook page and through our Twitter feed. Obviously well received from the folks that spoke tonight. So it's something that I've tried to do. I don't think it's something that we want to obligate ourselves to do, to be you know, on the hook for, you know, notifying everyone when, you know, whatever level it is. But I think it's something, if we can do, we should be doing. I just think we need to be cautious in taking on the liability of such that might be assumed if we were like claiming that we were the authority on the lake level, and we'll tell you, you know, it's 11-1, everybody out or whatever. So just kind of FYI on that. The audio from this from this meeting is now posted again, just to let the public know, on our website, and we're obviously live tonight, and it's played broadcast on Channel 4 for the whole month. So people definitely are viewing us. We are, you know, reaching out to the public, and I think in a way that we haven't done it, you know, previously. So this is great. And the only other thing I have to mention is on our listserv, if people want to get our listservs and get on our email list, the easiest thing to do is to go online and just click on join us, join our list. But I've also now tried out this new thing where we've got a text to join. So like, if people text the word water to 42828, they should get in line with a couple text messages back and forth, which would allow them to register their email address. So you would text water, just those, you know, the word water to 42828, and then you would get an email back, and it would ask for you to text your email address, and then it would send back another confirmation that says you've been now registered to receive our water quality updates. So it's something I'm trying out, seeing how we can maybe encourage people that are, like, you know, reading the signage, you know, at regatta grounds in the summertime, to sign up for our water quality email list. You can only have one of these running at a time, so I chose to do the water one, and then if people want to update their subscriptions to, say, include the meeting minutes or the general announcements, they can do that too. So something that I think will add to the public's ability to, you know, to get information. So,
well, I would ask this question. I guess I look at it differently than you do, Paul, because we send out monthly information. We send out information monthly, right? Our water quality managing program isn't until, what, May, right? So if people are signing up for that, we could communicate through our standard, you know, newsletter and with an additional subscription capability in that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that this is, sorry, I'm just thinking that this is going to be used on our at our kiosks, and that being the main audience to get, because if you know, that's when you've got your mobile phone and you're just, that's all you have, you know, you just, and a quick text message.
How about you put a 2D barcode on it?
I have done.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, we have done that as well. We've done the QRC codes at the bottom of the E. coli. We did that last summer, actually.
Okay.
And what that does is actually, it, if you scan that, you actually get a contact list for the district. So you get our address, our email, our phone number. We could do a separate one, I guess, for directing you to the just a sign up. But that, if you get the website, right on our homepage is that sign up for the join our email. So, yeah, we've already done that one, and this would be just another tool.
Okay. Looks like there's nothing on the safety report, so how about the sign-on watch?
Okay, I'm going to use the screen here. Thank you. Okay, so HABS 2012. You know, we've been in the Sign and Watch program for basically almost 6 years, 5 years. This would be our opportunity to make some changes for the upcoming season, and develop this logo and HABS, which is Harmful Algal Bloom Surveillance, and that is the name of the state's program. So instead of calling it CyanoWatch, this could be our new name, effectively, for this program. You see our logo with some coloration there, just to indicate that this is just as a branding attempt. I think it just helps to denote these things a little individually. So we've got basically, if you remember, we have the green, yellow, and red signage that we put out. So we'd have new signs all throughout. And then the complication in this is, and what the board needs to look at, is the state has now, just as of like 3 days ago, 2 days ago, and I forwarded you a copy of the new informational sheets that they provide, which are very nice. They're very robust. They've got images. It's very educational. And whether or not we want to, instead of using our green sheet, use that. And then also, we talked about last time that there are those flip signs that they may be able to provide us, which are similar to the saltwater work that they do on the beaches. They're the signs that are flipped up, and they say one thing, and you flip them open, and they say another thing. And I've got some pictures to show that. So just moving through these here. So this is what the green sheet looks like, and you guys all have copies of these now in front of you. But just kind of, this is the informational sheet that would be posted year-round, and it would have just information about the program, you know, what blue-green algae blooms look like, when do they occur, what do I see, what should I do if I see a bloom, how do you know if a bloom is toxic, how dangerous are these algal toxins, and what about fishing? These are some of the, frequently asked questions. And it also states that, you know, our sampling season runs Memorial Day to Labor Day, which, you know, is an important added concept, too, so that people realize that while, you know, we might not be testing when the time that they're on the water. And, in fact, that's, you know, can be very important when we have a winter bloom like we did last just this last year. So the yellow sheet, as it would be, would look like this, potentially. And our HABS logo up in the upper left corner there, switching this to, say, blue-green algae, and then with this asterisk to say here, down here, scientifically known as cyanobacteria. So really not removing anything per se, I guess, but just kind of modifying when people's eyes would go to that information. And it says blue-green algae and or their toxins are often found in Devil's Lake at this time of year. And this would be published when we have an event that looks like things are coming on and we started our sampling. So these would be the data relative to all the sample sites, of which we have 12, very robust sampling protocol that we've developed. And then it has down here recreational water quality standards, and it speaks to the actual thresholds that are listed by the state and the World Health Organization on these algal toxins and or the amount of the organisms in the water. And then just another note here, it says that we're only testing for microcystin and that there are other toxins. So it's really a pretty concise, and I know people can't read it at home because it's small font, but if you were to see this in person, I think it's you can definitely see it. But and then it just speaks about what the health risks are and when you might be at risk. And these are this section down here, and all this is stuff that we had developed last year, as well as the language on these the stoplight, with the exception of we removed the word cyanobacteria and put toxins or blue-green algae in these two sections in here. On to the red advisory sheet. Now, this would go up when we actually had an advisory in effect. says blue-green algae with the asterisk again, and or their toxins have recently found in this section of Devil's Lake. We've got our caution swimming symbol and our no pet symbol here. And it says, while this sign is posted, do not drink the water. And then it provides that in Spanish. Avoid swimming or water skiing in the areas of scum. Keep pets away. Clean fish well and discard guts. Just simple, you know, bullet point stuff. Avoid areas of scum when boating. We've got our logo and our logo and our HABS logo. And then it's got contact details for both us and the Oregon Health Authority. So that's our green, yellow, red. This could be our green. And this is where we might want to take a look at, because this is stuff that's going to be statewide. And so anybody coming from the Valley or Eastern Oregon that would have seen this sign down in Douglas County, they'll have seen this sign. When they see it, they'll recognize it from home, and they'll instantly, assumingly, know that, you know, what and why you're looking at. And so this is the state's basically green sheet, and it says harmful algae blooms in Oregon waters. And we have this as a PDF, so we could effectively add our logo or something to it too. We could customize it a bit, provide people a contact, local phone number, local email. But it says, what is this stuff? You know, so it's really taking a pretty common person view of this. And it says harmful algal blooms, and it says HABS, and so you see the acronym again, are not algae at all. It says they are actually made up of cyanobacteria, also called blue-green algae. Many cyanobacteria species create toxins that can make people and pets sick. And then it says, so what's the problem? And it says HABS can create toxins that can cause illnesses in humans and animals, pollute Oregon lakes and other fresh waters and with scums, limit recreational activities in lakes, reservoirs, and rivers, and then cause challenges for public water suppliers, including taste and odor and filtration difficulties. And it's got a couple images of some of these things, what they would look like under the microscope. All throughout here, that's what all these images are. And then what I like about this sheet is that it actually says, how can I help prevent a HAB? And so this is something that we don't have really included in our most recent worksheet. And it says, be sparing in fertilizer and pesticide application. Don't leave animal waste on the ground. Pick up after your pet. Regularly check and inspect, or regularly check and maintain septic tanks. So it's talking about like cross communication. Maintain native plants along shorelines or ponds when possible. So that's like our SOS program. And then it says, how can I keep my family and safe? And then it just goes through some bullet points. Do not wade or swim or water ski in waters that have signs of an algae bloom. Never drink lake or river water. And I think that's pretty obvious to people regardless. And I think that's why they say never, because you could get other, you know, bacteria in your stomach. If you decide to eat the fish from affected waters, remove all the fat, skin, and organs before cooking. Never cook with natural water from areas suspected to have a harmful algal bloom. If you or your pet become sick, seek medical and veterinary attention immediately. And then right at the bottom it says, when in doubt, stay out, which is a nice branding thing there. And then this image here is actually one of their flip signs. So this image in the bottom right-hand corner is one of these triangular signs, which we'll show on the next slide here. So that's what that sign looks like when it's flipped up and there's not a caution or there's not an advisory going on. It says water monitoring, and it just relates to the public that this lake or river is monitored for cyanobacteria, also called blue-green algae, which produces toxins that can make you sick. When in doubt, stay out. Don't go in water that is foamy, scummy, thick like paint, pea-green, blue-green, or brownish-red. So it kind of really speaks to what you know, what people could look for. And then for more information, it has the health authorities' contact details and their website. And we could put our get a sticker developed or something too, and get our email website put on this too. That'd be simple to do. And then if there's an advisory, this would be shown. So this sign would flip down, and then it would lock into place in the open form. And it says health advisory. There's a no swimming icon there. Avoid water contact, it says. Do not use this water for cooking or drinking. It says harmful cyanobacteria in the parentheses blue-green algae levels. And then it's got an image of a pet and a couple of people here by the water, but not in the water. So they're actually encouraging people to actually utilize the area. It says activities that don't involve water contact, like canoeing, hiking, and camping, are encouraged. And then for more information, there's their contact details. So that's really the green, yellow, and red that we have, and then effectively the green, yellow, and red that they have too, because this triangular one is could be the yellow one, and we could just forgo our yellow too, which would be this one. But it's I like the fact that we're providing that information out in the field too. So if we were to switch, I would think that, you know, going with this sign and then this one, and then leaving it, this up, which we have on our kiosks already, when there's actually a bloom. So that's the information I have for you. Any questions?
Well, I like the changes that we've made in our signage and handouts. I think that the documents that HABS puts out is, you know, I mean, I think there's some value there, but I also look at what we've done in terms of, you know, we have the same things. We're not seeing anything in conflict, and we're also providing a different feel in terms of, you know, being specific to our watershed, right, and our water body, specifically in the testing that we do. And I think some of that program gets lost. Start looking at using their signage. I think for the most part, I like the changes.
I think if you're walking up to one of our kiosks, these two green information. This one you're going to read, and you're not going to go, oh, were this harmful? Walking by and algae walking. You know, I'm thinking this is a information sheet. Mm-hmm. Without people can read through it and get the same gist of information if they read all the way versus this. And I really think this is valuable, this the yellow sheet, where it gives the cell counts and stuff, and if stuff's visible or not visible, you know, at different parts of the lake. Mm-hmm. I think it's important because people want to see, oh, what's this, you know, and then they can see, oh, regard grounds is fine, and so they don't have to worry about anything at that time. And I think that's really good too. I feel pretty much about it. I mean, it's I think those flip down signs basically are repeating just a different format of what we've existingly had. And
thank you for your work on this too, sure. Randy. Just so the board knows, I know the board knew that Randy. Well, I think you assigned him to have to do it since he missed our last meeting. But you know, you did it. I really appreciate you spending the time in reviewing these and providing comment and feedback.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this should be permanent. I mean, I'd like to see what we've worked on for this summer. Mm-hmm. Do it next winter and. Do we want to move to what the state's doing? Or mm-hmm. Because the state basically just did this in the last week or two, right?
Well, this is when it was released, yeah. The caution there is that their funding is kind of running out after this next year. It'll be here this summer, then potentially next summer, I guess. Mm. But, you know, as far as getting a bunch of signs, you know, that might be something that would be more difficult to do in a year's time. Just
I don't know. Is the signs the important part, or just, I mean, if the whole state and it becomes very accepted by everybody across the state, and couldn't we make the same just out of, we could make the same signs?
Yeah, but we could get them probably at lower cost or for free at this point. I guess that would be the advantage. But we could certainly, you know, and like I was saying before, we could add a logo of our own. Yeah, or contact information with a sticker or something that would be permanent.
Well, I think that what we ended up coming up with is the goal that we were looking at, whereas some of the state stuff they've just come up with is just basically a reformat of what we basically had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the complaints were coming from, people that utilized the lake or came to the lake or
mm-hmm.
we heard from not only board members but from audience people coming up.
I personally don't see a need for that triangular sign. Seems to me you could the one that's necessary when we do have a problem, mm-hmm. so you have to tell people what's going on. But to tell them would be really
mm-hmm.
and you could replace that with some of our own advertising, something like this lake is
mm-hmm.
managed by
mm-hmm.
improvement district.
Mm-hmm.
Call this number if you have any questions.
So you're saying that the HAVS program might actually go away next year?
Yeah, they had a 5-year grant from the CDC, Center for Disease Control, out of Atlanta, as did Washington State. Washington State has committed to an ongoing HABS program with significant monitoring involved. The state of Oregon hasn't been able to find the monies for that per se. Whether or not that is true in the future, I'm not going to be hopeful in that regard to a lot of monitoring money available for them, but it could happen. But just as far as getting these signs and things like that, I think, there is a larger window now, I guess. The thing about these signs is, the flip signs are pretty clever, and you could have on either side up on the cloak, the triangle versus the diamond. You could have whatever you want, and I think that we could buy those too. I don't know what they would go for, but and then customize them too, because it's something that people are beginning to recognize because they use it for the beach water quality monitoring program. So if you go to the Dee River right now, or to Dee River Wayside, you'll see that on that center island kiosk thing that they've got. They've had those for 5 years at the major, like you go to Night Beach, you'll see that, So that's why they're trying to just go with a theme that's seemingly working for them. It's a pretty low maintenance thing. They're padlocked, so they're closed. And then they have somebody locally that's like a contact, and then that person flips a sign down and relatches it.
Can we change those signs if we got some? Would they allow us to change?
I can ask that question, yeah. And
I think the other question,
I don't know if they would want us to, if they're providing it to us, they've gone to the trouble to create their sign. And then I guess it would probably depend on, if we were incorporating it into our program, I would say they'd probably be lenient on that, but if we're taking it and we're making some other use of it.
Right.
I would have to ask that question, and I can do that. I'm going to actually go to a...
Small changes.
Yeah, some small changes. Just a new sticker, basically, because that's, what these things are, is just a piece of metal with some...
vinyl on it.
Something. And that's what we've got out there, too.
I guess it boils back down to what we talked about last few months is how much do we want to push cyanobacteria? That's really the crux of why we changed a lot of this. And I know a lot of the new signage has it predominant, where we use the asterisk and moved it down just to explain to people what it actually is. So I guess it really boils down for the board to, we even had somebody mention something tonight about that wordage, cyanobacteria word. So I guess it's up to the board just to decide if they want to mirror this state recent change or... use something that's a little softer for a year and revisit it.
And, I could, ask the state basically what, Noel was saying here is relative to their, their two signs, if there's some way of us, and I think the one you're actually more concerned about, well, you were talking about the when it's folded up, but also the green effectively sign, information sign, and that one, you know, also is a PDF. We could modify it a little bit, you know, pretty simply. I mean, that's what we've been doing to generate these other things. And they did put it to ask us if we wanted some laminated copies of these. I just went ahead and put a request in just in case the board wanted those. We don't have to accept them, but and that's not a huge expense. You know, when we're talking about the program overall, you know, the signage is the cheaper component.
I guess here's my thoughts on this. I mean, I hear you telling me that these guys may not be in business next year. We've got an ongoing program with, you know, fairly for the people who visit this area and live here, are, you know, will recognize this and know what it is. I don't see any reason why we should shift before we know that this is going to become something that's permanent and ongoing state. So I guess I just maybe put it out there and make a motion that we adopt the signage that you guys have changed for, you know, for the use in this next water monitoring season. And if you want to collect some of the stuff for, you know, potential use in the future, then we would do that, you know, when we do have the opportunity. And when you go up, you know, you'd share what we're doing from our program. Because mm-hmm. our program, from what I understand you're saying, is going to be around longer than potentially what they're doing.
Well, see, the
they
reason...
They set a standard and go away.
So the reason they're going to the permanent signage is so that they've basically completed their five-year task, effectively, the CDC grant. So they're trying to create that uniformity, or whatever the word is, across the state. And that, you know, wouldn't go away. That wouldn't go away. People that are monitoring would just utilize that standard, and that would be the benefit. It would be, you know, somebody coming from the valley that just visiting Devil's Lake in the short term, hadn't been here, would see that because they were up near a lake, Blue Lake or something, where a sign like that might have come across it. So that's the reason so that part of the program wouldn't go away. That would be the benefit of having those permanent signs, and that's why they're doing that.
I like the changes.
I have an opinion.
You have an opinion? What's your opinion?
Yeah, my opinion is that if, you know, indeed cyanobacteria is harmful, you know, this is kind of a warning label. And to minimize the danger so that maybe someone will do something that they normally wouldn't do had they read the danger, I think is ill-advised. I think we have an obligation to people that are using our lake. When there is a bloom, our lake is, in a way, a dangerous product. And dangerous products have consequences if people use them. And to monkey around with the verbiage to make something that's scary less scary, I think is a disservice to people that are using the lake. This is just my opinion. I think our mission should be to work hard to eliminate the dangers that are within the lake, to eliminate the cyanobacteria, and not to round off the edges so they don't seem quite so dangerous, and maybe someone would use it that they normally wouldn't had they been aware of the danger. It's my opinion.
So I guess Kip, I don't understand about that is, we're not saying anything different than the state signs. We're putting it in different words, right? We're communicating it differently, but we're not saying, hey, you know, everything's great when there's an algae bloom, go in it and drink the water.
I'm just saying it's a slippery slope, and, you know, our decisions will have consequences. If someone were to go into an algae bloom and get ill because it didn't seem that dangerous when they read the warning sign, or there was no warning sign, we're not going to call it cyanobacteria because it's scary.
This is basically what the state of Oregon had up till just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So they've been using this for 5 years?
This years. Kind of green sheet?
You know, the HABS program, that's been, how many years have been out there?
It's been about 3 years that they've been developing the program, and they're... verbiage has morphed a bit, and what their verbiage is going towards is cyanobacteria, also known as blue-green algae. That's what we've heard from them as far as the direction that they're moving the language around towards. And that's the way the federal government's doing it, too, so that makes sense from their perspective for sure, too. I think it definitely has value to have consistency, and then that the goal of our that I was asked to do was to provide some consistency to the states, and that's why we went to this HABS program versus CyanoWatch, and to look at the word cyanobacteria, and so that's what our three, you know, green, yellow, and red, I think, do. But if it's actually losing sight of the other goal, which would be to bring it to in line with the state, then this is an opportunity to look at this sign and or these permit signs. So that's really, you know, where we're at. I understand the concerns. I do. And the idea, you know, we didn't design this sign, but it did go through some scrutiny. Obviously, the state had somebody do it, and it does say harmful algae blooms in Oregon waters. You know, maybe we could put an FAQ in the corner, you know, or something, or, you know, just move the language around slightly, but just still stay with that look, too. So that might be something as a way of hitting both, because and I see what you're saying, Randy. When you look at that, it says harmful algae, and so maybe people just stop reading. Versus this, I don't know if they're going to read that or not. I'm hopeful. You know, it's a lot of information, and we looked at this, like when we have this, and then we go to this, it gets a little simpler, and then if we're really darn serious, it goes to this. And so that is, in effect, a way of trying to drive home the message. You know, when you only have 10 seconds worth of their attention and there's an issue, this would be up front. So this is good. You know, this is a very strong message, I think. This is a pretty strong message, too, and it should be, because it's potentially at a time in when things are changing. And things change pretty quickly, as you all know out there. It can get pretty green pretty quick over the weekend. You just get a couple of hot days. So that's definitely a pretty strong indicator. You know, but this actually, I like, frankly, I do, in most respects, mostly because it talks about be sparing in fertilizer and pesticide. Don't leave your animal waste on the ground. Check and maintain your septic tanks. You know, plant native shorelines. I mean, these things are things that we need the public to be doing, because that's what causes these things to occur. These harmful algal blooms are generated because of nutrients coming into the watershed. And so, you know, what's the problem? How can I help prevent it? And how do I keep my family safe? I mean, it kind of gets at a lot of good quality information. And when in doubt, stay out. It just kind of leaves it at that, and introduces kind of the flip signage to people, too. So if we're going to go towards the state's model, I think it's a pretty good time to do it.
I guess what I have a hard time with is the state. This isn't like their model, and we're the ones fighting against it. The state's basically all over the board how their verbiage is. I mean, when they release a water body, they don't even use the cyanobacteria on the press releases, and, you know, I talked about that a few months ago. And none of their stuff basically is in line. Maybe they've finally gotten it down now, but, you know, I'm just, when this is going to be posted up all season, and then when you have a possibility, you're going to post this side by side. Basically, you can see they go together. You can keep reading it. That's not going to work with the new one, probably. You know, like I say, this whole thing started because of the extreme negativity that we've been hearing from the public and people at large about cyanobacteria being a word that's misunderstood or has a super negative connotation. If, you know, I can't help that, you know. And like I've said before, scientific words, sometimes they really need to be used. There's, you know, there's thousands of products and stuff that we use that are not, we don't use a scientific word because nobody will remember it and understand it.
Well, I mean, the way to cure misunderstanding and misinformation is to provide information and education. So, I mean, the quickest way to solve this problem is you provide all the information so that it's available and people want to read it, can discover it. I'm not concerned about the scariness or the lack of scariness of the particular piece of information. I think it's our job just to put it out there, and so people can make of it what they will. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with putting all this stuff.
Well, in answer to that, I would say this sounds crazy, but we have more reason to put out recommending against than we do for this. To my knowledge, we've never had any sickened or killed by, to my knowledge, people gotten sick. But we have had camping aficionados killed. I mean, it's not something, you don't warn everybody about all the possibilities that exist in this world. I have no problem with this at all, except for that. Because if you see that when you go down to the park, automatically you assume that there's something harmful in the lake. You may or may not come up and read the rest of it, but you're going to see that. See the point when I expect you to do the job that you've been doing over the last several years, and that is you keep on top of things. And when you find that there's a problem in the lake, it doesn't take much time at all for you to go over to the radio station, which is next door to your office, and let everybody know about it and let the news guard know about it. Good point. And as Brian says here, just letting everybody know all the possibilities makes any sense.
So was there a motion on the floor?
I was suggesting that we a motion that we were going, you know, use the updated stuff, that updated material that you had put together with Paul for this season, and make sure that, you know, we get additional direction maybe for subsequent changeover next year for depending upon where this program goes.
Was that a motion?
I don't know.
So that means not to use this or to use this?
That means using the documents that we've been using, right, in the format that we've been using them for this next season, and, you know, depending upon where the state goes, you know, for next year. I'm not saying don't get any of these signs, because we may put some of these up. You know, if the flip signs are only available for this year, then get some flip signs, and if we decide to go ahead and use them and switch over to that next year, then let's do that. But
I second that.
Any further discussion?
Well, is the motion to
use
get all the available signs from the
motion is to use the updated documentation from what we've been using over the last few years as our primary avenue of communication for this year.
Okay. And obtain the flip signs.
And go ahead and obtain this.
Okay. Well, when he's saying this, he's putting his hand on the flip signs. And
I'm putting my hand on the stuff that the state is working
on. So
everything else.
We won't have the flip signs, and we won't put up the flip signs, and we won't put up this. Is that correct?
We're going to use this documentation for this year, which is basically the same thing, but is in a format that our constituents are used to seeing, right? And then if we need to switch over that, then we'll have a little, you know, communication campaign or something for next year. Okay, so all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No. Aye.
Oh, good.
No.
But my only issue is just deciding now what we're going to use and not use, and we could decide that later. I mean, I like the idea of getting all the signing. But
we can make that
regardless change of the motion, we can decide later. So.
Right. We got next. It's like we have new business, the budget calendar.
Budget calendar.
Yeah.
Budget calendar. I'm a hero. Is it always budget time?
That's the worst time of year, isn't it?
Okay. So we're going to have our annual budget meeting here in these chambers, May 4th. It'll start at 10 o'clock. We see a budget committee member in the audience. Don Sell is position one, Jim Hoover, position two, Alex Ward, position three, Jim Park, number four, and Douglas Peary, position five. All of these gentlemen have said that they're able to go and attend, so that's great. We will have a vacancy, one vacancy after this summer. So we had an interested party, and local budget law says that if you can get new blood in the mix, you are almost required to. So that's great. It provides opportunities for additional people to get educated on how the budget process works and et cetera. So when the position that two is expires, we'll look for a new person again for our following year. But right now we're all up to speed because we appoint people to three-year terms. So we'll be live here again, and we'll be televising that on Channel 4. Public's welcome to attend, and we'll have a short period to provide public comment. And if we get a lot of public, you know, I think maybe we need to focus on using timeline, maybe, if that's the case. But because those meetings can run kind of long, as you know, and we need to get through them, hopefully in like 3 hours, it's been typical. There's a synopsis of the proposed budget calendar here. Tonight we would need to appoint the budget officer, which has always been the lake manager, and then adopt this calendar. So I would put forth that to your motion, if you would, to adopt the calendar and appoint me as your budget officer, just to comply with the budget law.
Well, you're going to hate me asking this, but something's come up in my... I've had a trial schedule that I cannot get out of that's going to span... It's the fourth... Let me think about this. Third, fourth, and fifth. Is that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? It's Multnomah County.
Okay,
and
yeah.
So I'm concerned about two things, that and the regular meeting date. But I don't know. I realize that the serial nature of the budget process means that reschedule one date, you end up rescheduling other dates.
Hmm.
Also going to be talking to you about rescheduling the May meeting as well, only because I think that this sewer LID issue is going to be well heated up by then.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know if it's something we need to discuss now, but I see the budget committee meeting on May 4th. And I'm just saying I won't be able to make that.
Mm-hmm. And we...
The judge has said that this case is going. There's been about three postponements, none of which are my fault, but it's going, and he's not making any excuse. The case isn't going to settle, so...
Mm-hmm.
So does anybody else have any conflict that we need to worry about? We wouldn't be able to put together a quorum for that. Brian was going.
Yeah, we can. These aren't set in stone. This was just the window of time. We chose Friday right after a meeting, our Thursday meeting, just as kind of a matter of convenience. But that could be a different Friday, or we used to do it on the Monday following. But those meeting times might not be available for this chamber. So really, we're just in a different scenario that we're not used to having to book in advance the space, the meeting space.
Do we have to adopt this calendar this meeting, or can we do it next meeting?
We can do it next meeting. It's best if it's done early so that people have an opportunity. But really, to identify when the meeting is going to take place. I don't think we're in any harm to wait a month if there are some better dates.
Well, all I'm thinking is I'm going to be asking and explaining why I think we should reschedule the regular May meeting, and so we might want this to coincide with the regular May meeting if the board is in agreement to reschedule the regular meeting. And so
Well, I think we could do both of those tonight if there's a calendar that works for people, too. I mean, I don't...
I would point out, I was looking at the calendar, too. There happened to be, I think, 5 Thursdays in May. You know, however we do it, if we postpone it 1 week, the regular meeting, to it would be
the
May 11th.
10th.
Yeah.
And then 11th for the budget meeting.
If we postpone the regular meeting to May 10th, it'd be 5 weeks between the April meeting and the May meeting, instead of 5 weeks between the May meeting and the June meeting, because there's going to be 9 Thursdays in that span of time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in terms of crowding one meeting date with a meeting date like 3 weeks later, we won't be doing that.
Mm-hmm. That would seemingly work.
Is that going to work within the timeline of the budget to push it back to the 11th?
It would do. It's really with the budget law, it's really like you just have to have the committee meet, and you have to provide notice of it being of that meeting. And it's changing this year, so normally you have to publish it twice in the paper, 30 days, approximately 30 days prior, and then again, not more than 5 days prior. So those are just quirky things, and now it's just you have to publish it, I think, just less than 30 days prior, and then post on your website or something. So all that's changed, and that's why I've got to go to the next budget, as I encourage the board to get budget review with the Department of Review Revenue. So I don't think so. It's just a matter of choosing the right day for the district. I mean, that's all that we have to really obtain, and then provide the notice.
Well, let me ask, does anybody on the board have a problem with changing the dates to May 10th? For the regular meeting on May 11th for the...
I'm far enough out where it doesn't make a difference.
Okay, so then we just have to hope our budget committee members don't have a problem with the change in the dates. But
So I guess my only...
To finish the thought, then what you need to do, Paul, is make sure we're not trampling on the legal requirements for the spacing of these dates. And if you can determine that, then maybe we could adopt a new calendar at the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a problem. It's, you could have, you have to just provide enough time to get the budget committee's recommendation published into the paper. So, if we meet on the 10th and then there are some, even major changes, we could get published not on that next Wednesday, because that wouldn't make the time frame anyhow, because it would have to, they need like by Thursday the week before. But say this following week, which would be
23rd?
Is that the 23rd? Oh, that Wednesday the 23rd? And then we'd have our regular budget hearing on the 7th, which is, more than even 2 weeks.
Right.
Out from that 23rd. So people would have ample time to know when the hearing is, and the hearing wouldn't change anyhow, and that's just an opportunity for the public to come in as well. So to my knowledge, it's just a matter of getting that published, the recommendation effectively published, and having time to make those changes. Rebuild the document, put it in PDF form, et cetera, et cetera. I think it'd be fine, but I can double check into that.
Okay. So I guess as long as this facility is available on the 10th and the 11th for us,
mm-hmm. That'll be the hinge. Yeah.
If not, then I stick with the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are you open on the 5th to the Saturday? Mm-hmm. In the budget.
Oh, is it the 5th?
Well, right now we have it on Friday the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
If we moved it to the 5th on Saturday, is this facility available as an alternate date? Like the 11th's not open?
No. Okay.
So see what you come up with.
Yeah, we'll shoot for May 10th for our regular meeting, and May 11th for a budget committee meeting, regular meeting at 6 p.m. Thursday, and then May 11th, 10 a.m. back in here. If we can do that, we'll do that.
Thank you to the board for your consideration. I wouldn't ask, but I've been put in the box this particular case, and so, and then I see the budget meeting at the same time. Thinking,
you really want to be here for it? Do we want to go ahead and appoint?
That would be good. I mean, I've got work to do on it, and I can do it, but I would prefer that I would be appointed.
Budget officer, is that what
you're... Yeah, it's called the budget officer.
I move that we appoint our manager, Paul Robertson, to be the budget officer.
Second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries unanimously.
Okay.
Public records request policy.
So, yeah, we've put forward here a proposal to adopt a policy for public records requests. It's been published on our website for the last week or so now. You all have a copy of it. The proposal actually, the policy is based on mostly on ODF&W's policy. I mean, it's almost verbatim in a lot of ways. I cut out stuff that didn't seem to be applicable. I also looked at ORS revised statutes and spoke with people at the Lincoln Water Soil Conservation District. Looked at the Oregon Department of Agriculture's website, which was very helpful. They manage all of the special districts like the Lincoln Soil Water Conservation District. So they have governments that are very much similar to ours. So that's a really good reference for us for any number of different things. And then, of course, Special District Association of Oregon as well. My goal tonight would be to have you review the policy. I've gotten some feedback. David, you had a typo, I think, that I caught. But, Brian, you added some language that I've incorporated. It's just, I think it's just clearing up. I actually have it printed here.
Tell us what the changes are. I know what mine was in terms of managed to manager.
Here's mine. It's hard to read. You might have them.
Paul, do you have it?
Yeah, I can just, I'm just coming right now here. Got it. So on page 2 at the bottom, just a very small change to the very last paragraph, deleting the word "of such fees" and the word "even," and then adding, basically just changing that last sentence that says, DLWID will provide a fee estimate and must receive approval and payment from the requester in the amount of the fee estimate, is added, before beginning to fill the request, and then Devils Lake Water Improvement District will bill for or refund any difference between the fee estimate and its actual cost. So it's just providing additional language that will say that if we think that it's going to cost $60 and it costs $40, we'll give them their $20 back. And then I think on page 3, the last bullet before fee structure section there, so in section 4 still, just adding the words "of the fee estimate" to that section. So it says, for a larger request requiring cost to incur greater than $25, the district will proceed only once payment of the fee estimate, is the addition, has been received in advance. The timeline for provision of the information will be upon receipt of payment. Some clarifications there.
Come on, Noel, you make a motion.
I like making seconds. Question would be that we changes and adopt them.
And adopt the public records request policy.
Yes.
there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Any further discussion?
He had a question under the first page on definitions. Third one down says public employee addresses, et cetera, et cetera. That be considered you, Paul, or
yeah,
anybody in the staff?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's all I had.
Okay. Favor adopting policy as amended in the conversation here? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
I know it's getting late, but come on. Okay, motion carries unanimously.
So just to formalize that one step further, if you wanted to adopt Resolution 2012-01, it's actually just a statement here adopting public records policy, which you just did.
You want to bring that over?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll make it official. So we are going to adopt Resolution 2012-01, which is the public records request policy for the district, Devils Lake Water Improvement District. Favor?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Okay. Non-agenda items. Do we have any non-agenda items this evening? Okay. Public comment on non-agenda items? Any board comments or announcements?
Alan? So, we had David Phillips last month, the intern, and he went over some different ways that were options to us for dealing with the vegetation problem. And as we navigate this rocky road to get grass carp, there may be another bullet in the gun. And after being inspired by David, I learned about the suction, diver assisted suction of weeds up. And so I did some research on it the best that I could. And from what I've read so far, it seems, and I talked to the manufacturers of the company that make these, that they might be a viable option. There may be a window of opportunity that those might be a viable option for the lake. I think we're denuded down to about 5 acres of weeds. And one of these machines with staffed by 2 people could make short work of that 5 acres. That would take about 2 months or a month and a half to get rid of the 5 acres. And then after that, since we already have a clean lake, the maintenance of it would just be quite within the, according to them, quite within the machine's ability to go and take care of spot problems as they come up. You know, obviously my conversations with him and research aren't the end all. There could be something that, you know, I absolutely don't know. But I would kind of encourage the directors to at least put that on the table and maybe take a hard look at it. Because if the bottom falls out of the carp market, it would be nice to have another alternative that's affordable. These machines are $30,000 to $40,000, depending on the bells and whistles. So, for the price of one of our projects that we seem to get, we could have one of these things out here and give it a try. Anyway, and second thing was, you know, sometimes I get confused when I hear somebody use the word pollution. And I think we have a lot of miscommunication because, you know, like some people say, well, there's no pollution because there's limited E. coli bacteria. But if we got nitrogen and phosphorus, well, if you're putting that in your garden, it's not pollution, but in the lake it is, and cyanobacteria. So we kind of have this difference of opinion on whether or not the lake is polluted. And I think if we could be more not just saying we, but we as an audience too, more communicative as when we say pollution, what exactly is it that we're talking about at that given time? Because you know we're going to say, oh, the lake's not polluted at all, well, because there's little E. coli, but there could be a hell of a lot of nitrogen and phosphorus in there. So anyway, that's it. That's all I have.
Yeah, I think that's a good point in terms of, you know, the way we communicate. I know we talk about nutrient loading a lot, and the nutrient loading is a form of pollution, right?
Right.
Because it's an undesirable component that's going into the water column, right? Or less than desirable. So, yeah, I would think that we can go forward with, you know, always keeping that in mind.
Yeah, it's just,
I mean, I don't
stops misunderstanding.
I don't look at the lake as being polluted in terms of, you know, what I would consider Love Canal, right, or something that I grew up with, and the polluted water body, you know, because I mean, in terms of, you know, we don't have the E. coli, you know, we're not, you know, we have some issues, some spot issues with E. coli from, you know, what we determined was canine sources last year, but for the most part, I mean, it's not like those levels are high in terms of overall watershed-wide pollutant, right? And it's, you know, it is mostly just looking at nutrient load, you know pollutants from the nutrients in the right? And the bottom of the lake. So.
Yeah. And, you know,
not necessarily the, you know, the overflow of the sewer. Right.
And I get confused listening to them. You know, we'll have one person say, well, it's polluted, another person say it isn't polluted, and they're at each other, and it's like, oh, they're talking different things. They're both right. Or they're both wrong, you know.
Right.
So. Well, I mean, that's why maybe we should just discourage the use of it, that word at all, because it's fraught with misunderstanding. Everybody hears something different.
Right.
Use the word. I think a simple solution is, instead of talking about pollution, just talk about, you want to talk about something bad going into the lake, just specify what it is that you're, the bad commodity that's going into the lake, use that term, and everyone else can decide whether they think it's bad or not. Some things are obvious, like E. coli.
So maybe what Paul can do over the next month is kind of gather kind of like, what are those specific talking, you know, pollutant points that we want to, you know, standard terminology that we should, you know, adopt in talking about the various forms of undesirables or desirables that are in the watershed, so that we can always make sure that we're putting out a consistent message in terms of structure of, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we could, it'd be good to make sure that everyone's messaging on the same point, you know, having a clear and so that we all know exactly what we're speaking to. And I think we do a good job of it internally. You know, I think we're all, it's just when you hear public comment, sometimes it might be using the word pollution and it might sound scary to people that hear that, and it might not be really scary. You know, it kind of gets at that kind of, what actually are you talking about? You know, there are 1,000 types of pollutants, you know. Temperature is a pollutant in streams, okay? You know, so it's, there's a lot of different levels of pollution, and it's an important element of pollution. I mean, it will kill salmon, you know. It's important to say thermal pollution, I guess, in that respect, kind of just making the point, like what Brian was saying, like be very specific as to what you're talking about. You know, if you're talking about bacteria pollution, say bacteria pollution.
I think just the word pollution alone is such a loaded word.
Yeah.
Just say bacteria. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What kind of bacteria time? We don't need to use the word pollution.
Right.
I mean, we can all decide whether we think it's pollution or not, you know, or whether it should be going to the lake or not.
Yeah. And I think it would be good that in our discussions with other entities that mm-hmm. they have a good understanding of the terminology that needs to be used too.
Yeah, I mean, our concerns are nutrient loading. I think that's a major concern that we have and share, and it's, you know, important to let the public know that those sources of nutrient loading are, you know, coming from potentially a septic tank, you know, or coming from geese on that are landing because you've got a grass, you know, you've got grass in your front yard, and the geese want to go congregate and have a picnic for a while. You know, I mean, those are real issues, and that type of nutrient loading makes our blue-green algae issues worse. You know, it makes weeds coming back more probable. You know, those are the consequences. Getting rid of nutrients is key. You know, it's a key factor in the health of the lake.
I don't think we'll ever get rid of them, but we can do what we can to reduce them.
Yeah, get them back to background levels would be ideal. And then having, you know, nature really kind of take this course and heal up the lake in a lot of ways and get stuff to, you know, get a little bit more deactivated because it's at the very bottom of the sediment layer and over time, or it gets flushed out to sea or what have you. I mean, we're talking phosphorus and nitrogen. You know, that
so can you do that over the next month?
Yeah, I can.
A little fact sheet together on what, you know, what things we're talking, you know. So that when we're communicating interagency, you know, between us and the city, the city's trying to, you know, make the point, you know, this is the reasons why we're doing something. We're not just talking in generalities, but we're talking in specifics in terms of what we hope our program, our, you know, our collaborative program is going to come up with in terms of positive impact, right? And then just so that if somebody wants to come on to our site, we can have a, you know, a small dictionary of the terms that that we would be using. You know, good idea.
You know, with regard to the diver-assisted suction, I want to go that back to that for a second. The, you know, we've heard the recommendation that the lake be, you know, 20 to 25%
vegetated,
but nobody really knows what that means. It doesn't mean like you take the mass of the lake and top to bottom 25% or 25% of the bottom surface or what. Putting that aside for a minute, though, could you expand your research to try to figure out how much it would cost to, I don't know, what are we trying to keep it to 25%?
Right now we're at 5, so, and we're at 5 of, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we wouldn't be talking about
5 acres even, maybe,
5%
versus acres.
You know, when you talk about the scope of the management area, right? It's 5 acres is different from, you know, potentially managing 675 acres, right? Or 600 acres because we're doing a 20% buffer, you know, within 10 feet of the shoreline, right? But, you know, that's the scope of the overall maintenance is the, you know, somewhere in the 650 zone, 630-acre zone, right, that people would have to monitor and use that and deploy that kind of technique against, right?
Well, according to the, you know, and this is all according to one company that sells and, you know, that manufactures them. So, you know, this is biased, and I think you have to take the bias in with it. But according to them, we've got an ideal lake for this type of management, and they use a kind of a community. What they're doing in the other lakes, they're using kind of a community observation program where members that are around the lake will spot growth and say, you know, this is an area that needs attention, and that's how they're mapping it out at this time. The nice part about it is that it is very selective. If you get that 10-foot or 20-foot weed that you don't want, you know, you can beg the grass carp to eat it, but this, you just go suck it out. And you can very well manage not only get rid of the plants that you want, but you can keep the plants that you want as well. I had something else to say, but I think I forgot it.
Well, why don't we do this? Once you, you know, get with Paul and kind of give him what you have and get some direction from him on what the next steps would be. And
oh, I know what I was going to say.
Needs to be an agenda. Yeah,
according to them, we've got a perfect bottom. We've got a soft bottom, which is just great. And the deeper water isn't going to have plants in it. And and the shallower water, the plants are easy to get. So the according to him, our lake is the right depth, the right soil. And we have an opportunity because 95% of the work's done. You know, all you have to do now is get it right when you see it, and it's out. And you can determine. We're more like gardening rather than landscaping.
You know, the right way to look at this is that not so much worrying about the percentage of lake that's covered with vegetation, but we just want to get rid of the invasives.
Yeah.
So we're just poking around, you know, looking for the invasives and letting the natural vegetation go. Well, I don't think we have to worry about the natural vegetation by itself, you know, crowding out everything else or doing anything other than being a nice, you know, reaching the right level and staying there.
Yeah.
It's the invasives that are the problem. And you know, so maybe that is the point, that we, you know, you have to have a monitoring program so you know where it is, and you just have to keep after it selectively and periodically and regularly.
Well, according to this
our budget
company, yeah, they go in and they you not only suck up this year's, but you suck one level deeper and you suck up last year's as well. That's the way they propagate. And by the time you do it the second time, the second year you have them, you don't have nearly the problem. I mean, you know, it's the difference between pulling a dandelion out by the roots rather than just mowing it with your lawnmower.
That I think what Brian's trying to say is we need more, actually, plants. Okay. But it's impossible to find that happy medium with just these fish.
Yeah.
Because they could care less. They want anything. So, to get rid of everything, I don't think is what we're looking to do. As a matter of fact, we do need some for a habitat for the bass, etc. I don't know.
Yes. As you rebuild the lake, you want to rebuild the fishery as well. You know, wouldn't it be nice to have it teeming with all sorts
of
fish?
It sounds like what we need to do is add ourselves an activity to the agenda item so that, you know, we can have, you know, a little more informed, you know, kind of discussion and structured.
One thing, if you do more research, I'd like to see maybe Paul's got the maps for all the depths, and to find out, you know, if you can hand pull up to four feet, supposedly, is what they've been saying. From 4 feet to 12 feet, 15 feet, where invasives will grow from, you know, up to that 12-foot mark or whatever. Find out how many acres you're talking about that you would have to be suction diving on at one point. I've been on the lake back when the weeds were here, and in the spring, boating was pretty easy. You know, the weeds died back quite a bit in the winter. And come middle of July, 1st of August, it's just choked. I mean, so you have a growth that's extremely fast in the summertime. So, you know, unless you're on top of it, if it gets ahead of you, you're never going to be able to pull up back on top of it again. Not in suction, but it'd be interesting to know, you know, how many can they do with this machine? How many acres per day, or
actually,
partial acres? Or
they do 2 acres every 40 hours.
So 2 acres a week?
Yeah, roughly. And that's on the aggressive side. You know, you can figure 1.5 to be conservative, according to them.
Well, so to figure this out, I mean, we didn't know the cost of the divers.
Yeah, you've got two divers. You're going to need at least 2 people. And if you want to get really aggressive, you can do 3 with 2 pumps working.
Are we not allowed, by the way, Paul, to use dredge of any kind in the... I mean, I understand there's this 50 yards, and that's forever.
Yeah, it would be require a permit, to my estimation and understanding. But I think it's something you could get. I mean, if the Devil's Lake Water Improvement District wanted to get a permit to do this type of vegetation management, and it researched it and it had good justification for it, I can't speak for the state, but I would hope that they would consider.
They don't allow any in-water work during the February to October time frame.
They have the work window, and you need a variance to work outside of that window. Yeah.
So, if they're saying 2 acres a week, roughly, is that one?
40 hours. And
so that's 40 hours of work?
Yeah, 40 hours of work, right.
So let's say it's 3 acres, 52 weeks.
Really, two acres. Yeah.
So one guy working year-round or two guys working year-round, you're going to cover
roughly what?
100 acres. Or
100 acres.
Or 50 acres.
We need three teams if the whole lake was having issues.
Yeah, and that's what you're saying, the window of opportunity is now because the lake isn't having issues. You know, sitting there and drilling into a weed-infested area, it takes a lot more time than, you know, you're just going over nothing, you know. And you find an area that's an upstart. And as soon as you can identify the invasive weeds, then you take them out, which also encourages the growth of native.
So how's that work then when, from my understanding, some of these invasives, they basically break apart at the end of this growth cycle, and then they just float all over?
Don't ask me.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're never going to get completely rid of them, but ideally you have this regular program. Yeah. We're wandering around the lake looking for these sprouts. And
what are you actually collecting up? Are you collecting up...
roots and shoots, so you're getting the whole plant.
That's it. So you take everything, including the ground that's around them, the soft material, and then you let that go back in and you just keep the plant.
Yeah.
You let it would be turbidity in the lake. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have a short-term turbidity issue. Yeah. And if you're doing a two-acre area, you'd probably have a curtain that you would work it in, your daily kind of curtain. But, you know, as you know, you stir up the lake, it doesn't go back down to nothing right now. It'll stay stirred up, but, you know, over the 24-hour period, settles out pretty decently.
Yeah. And plus, as you pull them up, apparently, you know, it moves puts the sediment back in the water. Plus, it allows you to see that you did the job correctly. You know, you'll see all, there's fancy names for all the parts of them, but it lets you know that you got it all.
Does that then release somehow? I mean, whereas it was stable and the all the goodies were not leaving that area, now all of a sudden they've been loosened and they can go wherever and allow them to be used by plants, whereas they were kind of...
You mean like the nutrients that are...
Yeah, the nutrients.
By disturbing the sediment.
Yeah.
Probably not. Because if you actually disturb the sediment, you're actually oxidizing the sediment. And if by oxidizing it, you're actually more causing the phosphorus to precipitate back out and be, you know, knocked down. Iron and phosphorus together and oxygen create a precipitate. And so that would stay as a solid. So to some extent in the short term, but long term, I wouldn't think. Yeah, I mean, it would actually, even in the short term, it would probably be not happening. Yeah. If we could oxidize all the sediment, we'd be in good shape.
Boats doing that.
It definitely does. Definitely, you can get, you know, in a 4 foot, in an area that's 4 feet deep, you can. You know, change the bottom, but in 8 feet, you don't. That wave energy goes right over the top. If you sat down snorkeling at 8 feet deep and a wakeboard went across you, you're not going to really get the pulse as you might think you would.
Wake,
you
know,
wake surfer. Yeah, that's an extra couple feet. Yeah, but you know, water is really heavy. It doesn't like to move. And so water on top of water is even heavier. And so when you're down at the bottom, that water is not really moving around much. You know, wind doesn't really move that bottom sediment around until it really turns. And it'll start stirring up in the near shore, and so that sediment will move out, and it might look like the whole lake's cloudy, and it is, but most of the sediment was disrupted in the near shore. Not so much out, you know, 8-10 feet of water, because the wave energy just doesn't penetrate that deep. You know, we heard very clearly from the erosion study that the wave height, and then it's like 1.25 times the wave height is the disruption of the is where the energy is applied. So if you've got a 2 foot wave, then you've got, you know, 2.5 feet of energy going down to, you know, down. But if that's in 4 feet, you're still just, you're not really even moving much at that point.
Okay, so I know that one of the activities that we're working on is alternate strategies.
Yep.
I guess if you want to
get with Kip and work that into the alternate strategies component. That would be
we'll bring it in as a new agenda item, and then it'll just kind of go into vegetation management. So it'll, because it's part of the Devil's Lake plan.
Is that something that our consultant is working on, or that staff is working on in support of?
Eilers? Joe Eilers?
Yeah. Is Eilers working on any alternative management strategies, or is it staff that's working?
No, he's not. That's not part of...
That component is on
yeah.
you and staff?
Yeah.
Okay. You have the man to work with right there. Okay. Any other comments? If not, I will...
Use that gavel, baby.
Gavel is finished. Concluded our meeting.
Thank you.